because crops and animals won't wait. Jimmy knows all about it because he lives it. And Jimmy knows what you're going through because he goes through it too. He's here to talk about it. It's seed and feed, chemicals and compost, vaccinations and irrigation. It's time for Today in Ag with Jimmy Clark.
Hey, good day to all you great stewards of the land. It is Today in Ag with Jimmy Clark, brought to you by the First National Bank and Trust of Elk City in Sayre, Oklahoma. Happy Monday, everybody. I hope you had a great weekend. I'm trying to get to where I'm supposed to get. Marcus is laughing at me. There we go. Let's check out some temperatures in western Oklahoma, eastern Texas Panhandle. 56 degrees at Boise City, 63 at Beaver, 63 at the May Ranch, 64 at Lahoma, 72 degrees at Cheyenne, home of the secret weapon. You know who the secret weapon is, Marcus? I believe so. let's see here. 71 at Eric, 70 at Hollis, and 70 at Bessie. We are broadcasting, Marcus and I, live from the Pack Saddle Grill up here on the north side of the South Canadian River Bridge, Pack Saddle Bridge. Today is version 2 of Jimmy's Wildlife Wisdom Hour. And you're the lucky guy today, Marcus. Hopefully I have some wisdom. Marcus is my favorite guy from the French Quarters. Marcus Thibodeau, he is a biologist for the Oklahoma Wildlife Department, and also he is the manager of Pack Saddle, Pack Saddle. I get them all mixed up. Sandy Sanders Wildlife Management Area, and also the Ellis County, and he helps out with the Black Kettle.
Yep.
And actually, you help out with a bunch of them.
Yeah, I try to.
Yeah. Well, thanks for coming on today.
Thanks for making the drive up here.
Well, I was trying to save the state of Oklahoma some fuel.
That's right.
But in return, you and I just finished a basket full of calf fries and corn.
Working lunch.
Yeah, it's really good. So, yeah, we're up here at the Pack Saddle Grill, and people are piling in. So it might be a little noisy in the background. I'm sorry about that. The text line's wide open. The Fowler Agency text line is wide open if you got any questions for Marcus. The reason why I came up here, one of the reasons I come up here, I wanted to come up here is 5 days and counting.
Yep. Quail season's coming up.
Quail season's coming up. It don't seem like it. And looking at the forecast, it might be a little warm.
Yeah, that's going to impact the hunting a little bit.
And you know what? That's all right.
Yeah, I mean, the biggest thing to look at is, you know, humidity when it gets to warmer temperatures and like stuff like that. Scenting conditions for your dog. So
right.
It'll still be good hunting. Just might not have to wear those heavy jackets.
Yeah, it's a... Yeah. People heard we were going live, and now they're packing in here.
That's right.
Hopefully you get to sign some autographs after this.
I'm going to sign them under your name.
So, first things first, thank you, Paula, for letting me do this up here today. This is great. And the food's excellent. I'm sorry, you just ain't going to beat the calf fries in Oklahoma.
Oh, they're my favorite.
Yeah, you're not going to beat it, but... Mark, let's start out with you on the personal side. How's the wife and kids doing?
Oh, they're doing great. Halloween, I'm glad that's over. That was a pretty eventful trick-or-treating.
Tell us more.
So we dressed Finn, my son, he's 4. We dressed him up as Evel Knievel because he's really into bicycles and stuff like that. So he rode his bicycle trick-or-treating, and I thought that would make things easier, but that was... quite the show.
How many trick-or-treaters did he run over?
Well, he was trying to jump curbs and crash into pumpkins. It was not very well thought through on my end.
But he had fun.
Oh, he had a blast.
What did Olivia allow?
Well, she got her mom tax on the candy and stuff, so she was all right with it.
Oh, okay. Well, there's... Well, quail season's coming up. We're not only going to talk about quail today. We're going to talk about other things because what's your official title again? Besides being the Turkey King, what's your official title with the turkey deal?
So Western Turkey Coordinator for the state. So
okay.
We don't have just a turkey biologist for Oklahoma. We have an Eastern Coordinator and a Western Coordinator. So I do the Western side of that, and then like you said, the day-to-day biologist stuff for Black Kettle, Pack Saddle in Ellis County, and then the whole Southwest Wildlife Region for Oklahoma. I'm the senior biologist.
Gotcha.
Over that, so quite the email signature. You're getting old. I know. Us talking today, it's like, man, it's been almost 10 years.
It has.
Crazy.
Yeah, because that was our 10th anniversary, our banquet for Coil Forever at Elk City, or for the North Fork Coil Forever deal, and you've been to every one, haven't you? Or you haven't been to every one, but you came to the first one.
Came to the very first one, yeah.
You and Wade, and who else was there? The game wardens?
My speeches haven't gotten any better at those things.
No, you're pretty dull. I'm not going to lie. Everybody wants you to come up there and say, you need to reload about the shotgun shells, yeah. You never do.
The year that we have a really good quail outlook, I end up missing the banquet. So.
Yeah, that's all right. We had a good time. Yes, we missed you, that's for sure. So, well, let's talk a little bit about the report, the survey just came out today, correct?
Yeah, just if you have an account with the ODWC, you should get our emails with all of our little newsletters and stuff like that. And the 2025 quail season outlook, I believe, came out either today or yesterday. Came out in the emails here pretty...
It was either Friday or today.
Yeah, here within the last few days. So.
Yeah, so this is the 35th year they've done that. Is that right?
Yeah.
Is that right?
So the way that they do these is county-wide surveys. They drive 20-mile routes in each county, at least one. And they use that to get an index of, like, you know, how many quail are observed on those routes and things like that. So
one of these days they're going to give you a drone, what you doing?
Man, we'll see. Technology, you know.
Crazy.
It's nuts what they can do with that stuff now.
So what did this one come out with?
So I believe the official report, 68% increase. So
isn't that from last year?
From last year. The thing that I'm the most impressed with and everybody should be... taken note of is fifth consecutive year of an increase in Oklahoma.
Right.
So that's really big, especially when you're talking about quail.
Yeah, it's awesome. I mean, I know there's a few areas that people aren't seeing, you know, what we've been, like, I've been seeing around my house and stuff like that. And that's pretty normal, I think. Not every square inch is going to be better.
Well, and, you know, it's all relative. You know, a lot of quail for us might be, you know, nothing for some other people or vice versa. But when you're getting those phone calls from guys on the eastern side of the state that are seeing quail when they've never seen quail, that's always really encouraging.
Yeah, and then, you touched on this a while ago. So this is the fifth year in a row we've had a boost to the quail population. And why?
Well, this last year, you know, definitely the weather was a huge factor. I mean, one of the mildest summers that we've had, lots of rain. So that's just great for making quail habitat. All the forbs that have been produced and, you know, keeping the temperatures mild.
Grasshoppers weren't slow.
Bugs everywhere. It's been great. I mean, the chicks, I mean, we were seeing early hatches, seeing later hatches. So the weather played a huge part in, you know, helping out the wildlife management side of things.
Right. Well, they, I know early on when I seen my first hatch, just the bumblebees, we call them, because they look like large bumblebees is what they look like. There's the grasshoppers, that was during the first wave of grasshoppers, and they were already big, because I was seeing that field that I seen those bumblebees in, the grasshoppers that were flying around there could probably eat those baby quail.
Bigger than the quail, yeah.
Yeah. So I was sitting there going, one of those grasshoppers beat that whole cubby. And the daddy was with them, not the mama, daddy.
Yeah, that's how the quail do things, is the male raises the brood while the mom goes and makes another one.
What is there anything scientific behind that?
That's just how the quail operate.
Yes.
The mom will go and try to start another brood once those quail kind of get established with the male of that pair. So
right. So if the daddy's taking care of the mama or the babies, who's taking care of the mama the second time around?
Another one.
Yeah, okay. Another one, so there's no marriages.
No.
It's a free for all. So yeah, I was wondering about that, you know, and then that daddy takes over that brood, Do you think, in your professional opinion, do we have three hatches this year?
So the earliest hatch that I saw this year, we saw baby quail the first week of June, which was pretty early.
Yep.
And then, you know, I've had reports just last month of people still seeing some quarter-sized grown quail. So, and there's potential in there for, you know, 2 to 3 hatches in summer pretty easy. And we'll get to see that. You know, we have wing boxes on all of our WMAs that get quail hunted. And that's what we use that for. We can age the quail off of their wings.
Right.
And that helps us take that information and look back at the, what our surveys were showing, what we were seeing on the ground. Because when we somebody harvests a hatchier bird this year, this season, and they give us the wing, we can measure that. We'll know exactly how many days old it is.
Right.
If you get enough of those wings, you can look back, you know, after the season and say, okay, so this WMA had, from the wing data, you know, 2 hatches, 3 hatches, stuff like that. Really, really important information. Same thing with bands on quail. You know, we band quail at different WMAs, look at the harvest, get an idea for the populations, and that's really just to help us do our job better. So.
Right. Well, wasn't it last year you was telling me about they found one of your bandit quail from here over in Canadian, Texas or something, or was that opposite?
That was quite a while ago. Last year, I think the farthest we had one called in was like 12 or 13 miles north of where that quail was banded.
Okay. So, that's still pretty good.
Yeah, that's pretty crazy.
Good. So with all these droughts that we've been having since the big one in 2010 and 11, has the quail's habits, not habitat, but has their habits changed?
I think every quail hunter, depending on how good they do, right, will have a different opinion on that. We're always going to kind of operate how they always have. They're shrub obligated, so they have to have some of that shrub cover. And so sometimes a drought or things like that isn't necessarily a bad thing if it's not for an extremely long period of time or if it's not a severe drought, like, you know, when we're having 20 days over 100 degrees, things like that. But it's all about, at a habitat level, vegetation structure. You know, like, you don't want everything to be the same. And the weather plays a big part in that. Like, this year, the battle's going to be stuff being too thick.
Right.
Because of all the rain that we've had, and the opposite would happen during a drought year, where food's going to be a little limited, it's going to be a little too open. So there's always, you know, two edges in the same sword.
Okay. Well, we're going to take a, what is today? Today's the Oklahoma Cattle Association happy hour. So we're going to take a OCA break. When we come back, we're going to continue number two, Jimmy's wildlife wisdom hour. Man, that's too many words for me to spit out at once. Anyway, Marcus Thibodeau with the Oklahoma Department of Wildlife is on with me today, and we're going to be talking. We're going to talk some more about quail. We're going to talk some about turkey, and I got some questions for you on turkey myself. And then at the end of the show, if we got time, we're going to talk about your burning and field deer habits.
Sounds good.
Because I've been watching your videos all summer. Looks like you're having fun.
Trying to.
All right, we're going to be right back after this.
He loves to talk about farming and ranching. Today in Ag with Jimmy Clark.
Hey folks, this is EJ Gretiman with ASCO Equipment out of Elk City, Oklahoma. If you need rental equipment, I got your back. From excavators to wheel loaders, telehandlers, and forklifts, we rent the brands that you know and trust. With flexible terms, responsible service, and expert support, we're here to keep your job on track. Need equipment? We're on it here at ASCO Equipment. Visit ASCOEQ.com or stop by our Elk City branch, 513 West 20th here in Elk City, Oklahoma, or you can just give me a call, 580-243-9233. Appreciate it, folks, and y'all have a blessed day.
Hi, I'm Gary Owens, the owner of Galleria Furniture. We've partnered with Serta to bring you exclusive mattresses. And for a limited time, when you purchase one of these Serta mattresses, you'll get a Serta wireless adjustable base absolutely free. don't forget, we always have unbeatable everyday deals like twin mattresses starting at just $99 and queen mattresses only $199.
Located in Elk City next to Tractor Supply, where friends don't let friends pay retail.
We did the Veterans Monument in Oklahoma City. At the time we did it, they didn't want any names on it. They were just doing the different wars in bronze panels on granite. 20 years later, they decide they want all the veterans' names on the back of the monument. Well, there's no way to engrave it, so they wanted to put bronze names on there. And we said, you can't. That won't work well. They ended up finding someone that would put the bronze names on there, and then they started kind of popping off and everything. So then they called us to go in and see how we could clad it and get the names on it after the fact. So there's just things that come up in the granite industry where you have to investigate and figure out how to fix it or create it. Some things you just won't do, but, you know, there's projects that are nice out there that not everybody will have a hand in. You know, will want to have a hand.
Willis Granite Products. Our website is willisgranite.com.
Briley Baca is an investment advisor representative of and advisory services offered through Royal Fund Management, LLC, an SEC-registered investment advisor.
Every dollar you save for retirement has a silent partner, and it's your crazy Uncle Sam. He's waiting with his hand out, ready to take a chunk of your IRA, your 401k, and even your Social Security if you're not careful. But here's the truth. You can fight back. With the right strategy, you can keep more of your hard-earned money in your pocket and out of Washington's. At Advanced Financial Strategies, we specialize in family wealth management, helping families in Western Oklahoma cut down on future tax bills, maximize income, and keep control of their financial future. Don't wait for the IRS to decide how much of your retirement you get to keep. Call me, Briley Baca, a certified financial planner professional here in Clinton, at 323-6800 or visit our website, retirewithbaca.com. Advanced Financial Strategies, your money, your future, your choice.
Next spring, you'll fire up the tractor, turn the earth, plant the seed, and be on your way to another harvest. If you take care of your tractor right now, before you put it up, do the maintenance so you'll be ready to go next spring. Everything you need to keep your tractor performing is at Camrock Supply. All the grease and hydraulic fluids and filters. All the nuts and bolts. All the tire patches. All the stuff is at Camrock Supply. All of it. Next to Fred's Steakhouse in Elk City. When it's time, make sure your tractor is ready to go.
Now, back to more of Today in Ag with Jimmy Clark.
All right, welcome back, everybody. We are live at Pack Saddle Grill up here on the north side of Pack Saddle Bridge by the Pack Saddle WMA, South Arnett, North Cheyenne. Did I get all that right?
Yeah, we're pretty creative with our naming.
Yeah, we are. Hey, so I don't know what year you started dating Olivia, but you've never got to experience one of the deals at the bottom of the hill, have you?
No. I've heard all the stories about it.
Just curious. Welcome back, everybody. Here is your Texas Panhandle Ag weather update. Lipscomb, 64 degrees. Humidity, 45. The dew point's 42. The northeast winds at 8 miles an hour. Peak wind gust today, 27 miles an hour. Obviously, no rainfall so far in the month of November. 8-inch soil temperature, 54 degrees. Here is your Central Crop Care Ag Grain Market update. Let me update it real quick. Man, the internet's as good as here as it is in my house. This Pioneer, fiber optic is awesome. This is good stuff. December corn, 434, up 2 3/4. Soybeans for November, 1119, up 19 3/4. Soybean meal, December, 319.80, down 180. Soybean oil, December, 49.76, up 1.08. Hard red winter wheat, December, 531, up 7. And let's see what the cattle's doing. Live cattle for December, 232.10, up 242. February, 230.42, up 275. Feeders for November, 342.77, up 390. And January, 336.77, up 487. Lean hogs for December are down 47 cents at 80.80. I got Marcus Thibodeau with the Oklahoma Department of Wildlife and Conservation, or however that is, OWDC. Did I get that right?
ODWC.
Yep.
I only had two shots. I got it wrong. He's the wildlife biologist for Packsaddle in Ellis County, and helps out with the Black Kettle Federal Grounds, and he's also helps out a lot with the quail experiments up here, or however you, not experiments, but
research.
Yeah, research. Yeah, that's a better word. What are you doing? Tell us what you're doing with research right now.
For just quail?
Yeah.
So we got a lot of different research going on, but just for quail, got a few like population studies, just trying to, you know, truth check us with our surveys. So doing some population stuff. Just now started putting some GPS backpacks on quail, looking at some kind of that behavior thing that you were talking about.
Right.
At that. Specifically, it's going to look at what quail are eating on the landscape. So with these GPS backpacks, you'll be able to see exactly where the quail went throughout the day. And then we'll go and collect the number two from the quail. And send that off to
see boyfriend.
Yeah.
The boyfriend, not the husband.
get its you know, feces, I guess is the $2 term for it.
Right.
Send it off and we'll see everything that they ate right throughout that day.
Yeah.
And then we'll be able to go back and see were they eating things that were just the most abundant on the landscape, or were they selecting for different things? Because nobody really knows. We know quail are pretty general, but with a lot of animals, you see some kind of selection in their diet for different things, like just because they're eating a lot of, you know, one particular seed or grasshopper, things like that. You don't know if that's really the best thing for them, or if it's just they're eating what's most readily available.
It's just a filler.
Yeah, and, you know, the research that's been done on that in the past has just been all about the amount that's in the feces, which is a little misleading. Right, because, you know, if, like today we had 100 calf fries.
And I had corn.
And yeah, so, you know, if somebody were to do the same research on us, would they think that we needed calf fries every day?
Right.
That's all we wanted to eat.
Right.
What we should be planting in the fields, you know, so stuff like that's just going to help us better manage quail when it comes to, you know, planting a food plot. Some of the habitat management stuff when it comes to making food for quail, just kind of fine focusing a little bit.
Right. So what's what is the most unique thing you've ever found in quail species?
So we haven't started it yet, so I'm not 100% sure, but this is pretty similar to some research I did with Texas horn lizards.
Okay.
So I did some pretty similar stuff with horn lizards. Everybody thinks that they just only eat ants, right? So when I did my research, it showed that a big part of their diet that's really important is the beetles that live amongst the ants.
Right.
Kind of the beetles would have been like the hamburger and the ants were the filler items like French fries.
Right.
So, but when I was doing that research, I mean, crazy stuff. You'd find seeds of different plants, all the things the ants were carrying, different types of those insects that live around ant mounds. So pretty unique. An animal that's only supposed to be eating red ants.
Well, you talking about the toad, horny toad there. There's, I don't know how many, probably a dozen in the last 10, 15 years. You know, we kind of had a little low on the horny toads there for a while.
Yeah.
Or horned toads, let me say. The horned toads. But the, I found horned toads on top of corner posts where the hawks had caught them, took them up there on top of the,
They stuck them onto it?
Stuck them onto it.
Yes, that was a loggerhead shrike.
Is that right?
It's a bird that you might probably saw grasshoppers and lizards and other things.
Yeah.
They call them a butcher bird, and they'll pin those horny toads or whatever they're catching onto, you know, barbed wire or locust tree thorns, and then they eat them off of that.
Like, oh, I didn't
hang
know
them
that.
Up and then eat them.
So those grasshoppers and those big beetles that I've seen hung up in the barbed wire, that's not because they didn't know where to fly. It's because
a shrike probably caught them and put them on there. Yep.
And that's just kind of his thing to hold it in place while he eats.
Yep.
That's crazy. See, I learned something today.
Well, that's the wisdom hour. That might be all I got. So I should have saved on to it for later in the show, maybe.
Yeah, maybe we should have. Well, So what was it, about 4, 5, 6 years ago, you had some radio tracking callers. Not everybody's heard this story, so I want to repeat it. I've heard it a bunch, but you had a radio tracking collar on a female quail and put it on out here at the research center, and it ended up in somebody's backyard in Arnett, is that right?
Yeah, that was some research before I got here. They had a bird that they tracked from Packsaddle to Arnett, and then they actually tracked the bird that came back to Packsaddle after it had its brood of quail.
Looky there, there's another expert just walked in.
Yeah,
fire, quail, turkey, deer, he's pretty cool and all that stuff.
We might be able to get him over here and talk in a little bit.
Yeah, we might here next break. It's what, 21 miles, Arnett? Is it that far?
Yeah, pretty close, something like that, about 20.
She raised a covey of birds in that lady's backyard or right there by it.
Brought them back, you know, so Packsaddle's had quail research going on at it since it was bought back in 1990.
Right.
And the stuff that we've learned about quail here has, you know, it's had impacts all over North America for quail management.
Right.
The long distance movements, you know, habitat stuff, I mean, everything. It's really crazy how much, when you go talk to quail biologists, you know, in Mississippi or Florida, they're telling you what they're doing is based on stuff that was done right here in Oklahoma.
And then they send people here, interns, I guess, right?
Well, a lot of people that come through the research program, you know, like research that we do, they go off and work in other states. And we always have that really good connection and all that stuff. Like Dwayne Elmore that you knew from OSU.
Right.
You know, now he's working down at the Tall Timbers in Florida.
Yep.
And so, you know, I talk to him all the time about things that he's trying, things that he's seeing. Really just a big world, but pretty small when it comes down to everybody that's working on quail stuff.
So I'm going to ask a question that everybody else wants to know now. What is the deal at the bottom of the hill at Packsaddle? Back in the day, man, we had this motorcycle gang coming here, and they had a big hootout, or a big, just a big party.
Yeah, I guess. That before my time, but I've heard the stories about it.
That's as far details I'm going to go with that. So it was a good time. And it used to be, what was the name of the bridge back then? Or still is, Busby, is that right?
Buzz Bradshaw.
Yeah, that was the name of the video. Yeah, it was some gangster stuff going on back there at the bottom of the hill. So it was a good time, though. Okay, let's get on with our quail talk. And, you know me, I love to call the fence lines the Super Quail Highway, because that's what it is. And I get a kick out of people. I mean, I want my place to look nice, too, but I always tell everybody, leave the fence lines. I know you got to spray your grass for weeds and all this other stuff. Just leave the fence line alone. Well, it produces weeds, and you'll be spraying it next year, too, and the year after that.
Yeah.
So just leave it alone. It's amazing that quail, and you know this, because I learned a lot about quail from you, 4 to 5 foot in the fence line on both sides, total width, is a highway for the quail.
Yeah.
They don't have to have anything else. They don't need to wander out there 30 or 40 yards. If they do, there's something out there to eat. But it's important to the roadside fences, the county right-of-ways, state right-of-ways, our fence lines within our own property is so important for quail, because there's a lot of insects, there's a lot of forbs and everything to eat in that fence line, whether you like looking at them or not.
Escape
from predators, they're under that fence, and sometimes those hawks don't come in there, they can't, you know. Is it still true from what I learned down at the Noble Foundation that snakes are quail's number one enemy still?
So what they predate, right?
Right.
So, like, anything that raids a nest is going to be pretty high up there.
Right.
They're not just killing one quail. They're killing a whole
covey.
Yeah, a whole
family.
Yeah. So, but that edge development, like you're talking about, and it's such a low-hanging fruit. You know, you're not talking about somebody having to change their operation or anything that they're doing. It's just get away from that that dogma of farming like we're back in World War II, and you're told to plant, you know, fence row to fence row, and keep, you know, and just leave a little bit for the wildlife, and it makes a big difference.
It makes a huge difference. And with the predators, you know, I rehomed about 90 raccoons last year on 30 acres of peanuts, and everybody thinks I'm crazy, but I can prove it to them. On my little half section where I live at now, I got at least 8 coveys of quail.
Yeah, and, you know, predator management, when we're making good habitat for predators by, you know, putting stock tanks in places that used to never have water, the battle of the Great Plains is woody encroachment, right?
Right.
The trees and all that stuff. When all that stuff is happening, you know, sometimes it's a lot easier to let somebody just come trap raccoons than it is to, you know, reshape your entire landscape.
Right. So rehome them.
Yeah.
That's what I call it. Rehome them.
It's a lot easier for me to let somebody come trap my property versus me go cut cedar trees for a whole day. So.
Well, this hour is going by fast, so I got to take a break. But first, today is the Oklahoma Cattlemen Association Happy Hours, and I wanted to update everybody. The fall gatherings is going on right now. Tomorrow night, November 4th, at the Freeman Beef Genetics in Hobart, Oklahoma, there'll be a fall gathering going on in there. And then coming up November 10th, Oklahoma National Stockyards at Oklahoma City, there'll be a fall gathering then. And then November 11th, the Western Oklahoma Livestock Auction there along I-40, just east of Clinton, will be happening there. And this is all going on with the Oklahoma Cattlemen's Association, and I'll remind you guys of those dates until they're all done. If you get a chance, go to one of those. Yeah, I'm telling you, it's well worth it. OCA is a great, great association to be a member of. So let's take an OCA break, and we'll be right back after this.
Jimmy's all wound up and ready to go. Today in Ag with Jimmy Clark.
You don't want to let your cotton set in the field day after day waiting to be ginned. Now to better serve you, the cotton farmers in Oklahoma and the Texas Panhandle, Lone Star Gin has processed over 540,000 bales of cotton. They've got locations in Pampa, Texas, and now in Burns Flat, Oklahoma. Lone Star Gin has the ability to process over 2,400 bales per day. All they do is gin cotton. Go to LoneStarGin.com for more information, and you can find them on Facebook.
Farming is no game, but when you're at the game and have the ability to control your irrigation in the field, it's a huge game changer. Valley Irrigation is where farming meets in-zone efficiency. With AgSense remote technology, farmers become MVPs of their fields. Real-time play-by-play control means you're always ahead of the game. Score big with irrigation technology from Valley. It's technology that improves your life and lets you beat the game and be in the game. Visit Knutson Irrigation to become the MVP of your field. Online at KnutsonIrrigation.com. They have your infield coverage and your back.
You're already grabbing your jacket when you head out the door. You know what's coming very soon. Don't wait to winterize your vehicle. Anti-freezer wiping fluid, battery charger to keep in the car, engine starters, flashlights, rechargeable hand warmers, WeatherTech floor mats to keep the ice and snow off your floorboard, D-Gel diesel, scrapers, and de-icer. And those gloves, because the fingers are the first to get cold. You know who's got all this. Napa Auto Parts of Elk City. 716 West 3rd.
You farmers like saving money on stuff you gotta have? You can save instantly when you buy two or more eligible Bridgestone or Firestone Ag tires at Blair Tire and Feed. Get $300 off all eligible AD2IF and BF radial tires and Bridgestone radials. Get $200 off all eligible non-82 radial tires and get $25 off Destination Farm and Destination Turf. Blair Tire and Feed at the crossroads in Blair, Oklahoma. Save instantly on the tires you got to have.
I've had several clients when we're sitting in a closing room, we're signing the final pieces of paper and we slide the keys across the desk and tell them, congratulations, you're a homeowner. And they're just elated. They're thrilled. They finally realize that their dream came true. They were actually able to own a home, and the children are in there with them. And they're like, I get to go get my new room. It's for the whole family to enjoy. They're very excited to own a home. I'm Joe Shepard, and I help make the difference at First National Bank and Trust of Elk City and Sarah.
Equal housing lender, member FDIC. As a farmer or rancher, you're always looking for ways to save time and money. The Apache Hay Wagon from Everett's Welding in Visalia, Oklahoma will help you do just that. The Apache Hay Wagon eliminates 80 to 90% of hay waste with its unique design. It hauls multiple bales, saving you time and money. Go by Everett's Welding today and ask to see the Apache Hay Wagon. You'll be glad you did. You can also visit them online at everettswelding.com.
XIT Auctions has a huge auction coming up Saturday, November the 8th, 5 miles north of Elk City, Oklahoma. The Lonigans are moving, selling four trailer loads of awesome furniture, household, shop tools, welding equipment, farm equipment, and much more. Saturday, November the 8th, the auction starts at 10 a.m. XITauctions.com for information or call me, Aubrey Latham, 393-4440. Saturday, November the 8th, north of Elk City, Oklahoma, XIT Auctions, ready to work for you.
Jimmy's all wound up and ready to go. Here comes more of Today in Ag with Jimmy Clark.
All right, welcome back, everybody. We got a special guest for a special guest, don't we?
That's right. Now it's the wisdom hour.
Now it's the wisdom hour. And the only reason I invited him over here, he didn't have the other beverage in his hand. Hey, welcome back, everybody. I got Marcus Thibodeau in here from the Department of Wildlife. It's easier to cover me so I don't get my DMW. Whatever it is. And we're talking quail. We're getting ready to switch gears. And this guy probably wished he had never walked in, but he's here now. And I've had him on the show before. You've been on my show before, haven't you?
Oh, yeah.
Yeah. Greg. Mr. Greg Allen from Roger Mills County. Here he is, the big dog with the Roger Mills County Burn Band, or not Burn Band, but
opposite.
Prescribed Burns Association. How's that? I'll get it straight. He's on here. And actually, you were lucky. Let me put my computer down so I can see you. So that was going to be my next topic with Marcus, because he's a firebug as far as out here. But he's doing a good job. If he just learned how to get more grass burrs, it'd make things a lot easier here at Pack Saddle.
They did well this year also.
They're extra sharp this year.
Yeah, they are. There's a dude. So, Greg, thanks for coming on real quick. Yeah. Short notice. So,
Let me know when my hamburger's ready.
Marcus, we've had, some major wildfires since 2016, 17. Just recently, the big ones, the Ray, the Stonehouse, the Durham Fire, all of them. And what do you think of, what's that doing for the quail? What has it done for the quail?
I mean, obviously they're tragic.
Yeah.
Like Greg and I both been out fighting these fire, some of the fires, all the fires that you talked about. And as far as habitat-wise, burning is good for quail and other wildlife. But when those catastrophic wildfires happen, it's on such a large area, such a large scale, that it displaces so much stuff that, in the long term, you could say it's going to be beneficial for the habitat, but as far as for the resource itself, they're too big.
Right.
And kind of how I would.
There's nowhere to go.
Yeah. I mean, you're talking about 1.5 million acres.
Yeah.
That's just too much.
And how big's the pack saddle?
20,000.
20,000. And this place is huge.
Yeah. And so when you're talking about like the stone. The Smokehouse Creek Fire, 1.5 million acres in 3 days. I mean, it's just destructive for everybody and everything. Eventually, we'll see it like it does now. It looks pretty good now.
Oh,
right?
Yeah.
It's come back, had all this rain on it. But now as far as the next 4 or 5 years, I would say it's not gonna be as great as if it was not burned.
Right.
Like that.
Well, Greg, I'm a believer, you're a believer. We just need a lot of other people to be believers, to help wildlife, and actually to help your own land prescribe fires. What do you want to tell people? How do you convince them to do it? Because they're scared. They're scared of these wildfires, and there's prescribed and control are two different things.
Exactly. I hate the word controlled.
Yeah.
That's after you put it out with water or whatever. I think the best thing is just come out and watch, observe what we do. Some of the biggest opponents are firefighters that have to go fight these big fires. I know we did 2 burns this year, and we never had to squirt 1 ounce of water that we did prescribe burns on. So all that planning ahead of time pays off. I mean, the maintenance of your fire breaks, just spend that little extra time. And what I hate is that call, hey, we're going to burn tomorrow. Can you get me a plan? And I'm like, no. I mean, a year in advance is probably not too short of a time. So, and the more planning we have, the better that burn's going to go. So.
I remember the gentleman from Stillwater that came down and spoke at
John Weir.
Yeah, John. He came down and spoke at Sarah's County Barn down there, and he said it was easier to burn 640 acres than 64 acres or something like that.
Oh, I'm sure Marcus will agree with that.
Sometimes the bigger it is, you know, like, and that's kind of with the Prescribed Burn Association. If we can get one landowner, go talk to the neighbors and try to include that stuff.
Right. Yeah,
we've done that several times. And it works even better if we can join with the Black Cattle Grasslands, because they have better equipment than we do.
If needed.
Yeah. I mean, we did a burn this summer, August, and a lot of people said, what are you doing? But it was a month later, the grass was already 18 inches tall. Of course, we had an unusual summer. I admit that. But well, we're there. You know, a month later, we actually burned adjoining. A month later, we did a adjoining deal, and it was CRP that the landowners had to burn for management reasons. It kind of snuck up on them, or we probably wouldn't quite went that late in the summer. However, the summer burns, we're having a lot better luck on brush management. You can have the leaves on the brush and the cedar trees. You might not think that you burned a cedar tree in the summer because they don't blow up like they do usually in the spring when everything's so dry.
Right.
But they'll be browned out in a week. We'll come back and they'll be...
Marcus, how important is prescribed burns for wildlife?
Oh, it's coil. I mean, talking about just right here in western Oklahoma, that's what shaped this landscape for centuries, is natural wildfires. And then the buffalo coming behind that and grazing the green up. And so that's this habitat is literally made to burn, and burn pretty frequently, about every 5 years or so. So when we don't put fire on the landscape, that's when we get these catastrophic wildfires, because we're just storing fuel and making it to where when a fire does happen, it is not if, but when, they can get uncontrollable.
Yeah. All right, we got to take a OCA break, and we'll be right back. Greg, thanks for stopping, because I know your hamburger's about here. And thanks for stopping by and helping me with the fire part of it.
You bet.
All right, we're going to take a break. Be right back after this.
Today in Ag with Jimmy Clark.
Kent Watkins here with SEI Agritech in Elk City, Oklahoma. Are feral hogs causing damage to your land and crops? Try Kaput, our highly effective bait designed specifically for feral hog control. Kaput targets hogs where it hurts, helping you protect your property and your livestock. Don't wait for the damage to get worse. Call us or stop by today at SEI Agritech on South Randall in Elk City to learn more about Kaput. Follow us on Facebook for the latest updates and solutions.
Life insurance and annuity products offered through Farm Bureau Life Insurance Company. Property and casualty products are offered through Oklahoma Farm Bureau Mutual Insurance and affiliated companies.
I was impressed that he came to my barn. That is what I like, is service. Service says a lot. I have not even been to his office. My time is very valuable to me. I'm very busy. It's a 35-minute drive from my house to Mangum. I don't want to drive down there every time I need something. That's going to kill at least 2 hours of my day, and I don't have that kind of time to spare. So when I get in business with somebody like this that gives me that kind of service, I respect the job that they're doing, and I appreciate the service that they're providing to me. I'm ecstatic. I'm very glad. It worked out like it was supposed to. You know, I don't think I could have picked a better insurance agent. My name's Bandy Silk. My family and I farm and ranch in the Delhi community. I'm a fifth-generation farmer and rancher. I'm glad I've contacted Mickey Lively for my insurance needs.
Hi, I'm Mickey Lively. I'm an insurance agent with Oklahoma Farm Bureau. My office is located in Greer County. Call me anytime at 580-782-3827.
Do you love the great outdoors? Maybe you enjoy trap shooting or skeet shooting, or maybe getting some target practice in at the firing range is your thing. If you're that person, you love guns. Hobart Farm and Garden has a whole room dedicated to guns, gun safes, ammunition, and more. It's quite impressive. You got to go check it out. They are Western Oklahoma's platinum Browning dealer and Glock stocking dealer. They're located at 1030 South Monroe in Hobart, Oklahoma. If they don't have it, you don't need it. Hobart Farm and Garden.
It helps to work with someone who's been down the same road you're traveling. Someone who knows what you're up against and what you're going through. When it comes to farmers and ranchers, that's us. That's who we are. Our lenders know ag inside and out because we're producers too. We approach it like a partnership. We want to put ag producers in position to be successful. We're very laid back and easy to deal with. And people seem to like that. We think you'll like it too. I'm Marty Maddox. Great Plains Bank in Elk City is here to lend farmers and ranchers a helping hand. Member FDIC.
This is the Elk City Livestock Auction Market Report for Friday, October 24th. 1,845 head were sold. 8 head of steers at 419 brought 465. 10 at 620 brought 364. 14 at 629 brought 367. 8 at 656 brought 362. 11 at 740 brought 330. 3 at 757 brought 295. 14 head of heifers at 410 brought 405. 6 at 533 brought 370. 3 at 557 brought 350. 9 at 572 brought 330. 5 at 598 brought 317.50. 4 at 614 brought 317.50. 10 at 734 brought 301. Butcher cows were 58 to 170. Butcher bulls 76 to 199. Bred cows 1400 to 3800. Pairs brought 2400 to 4100. Elk City Livestock Auction, 3202 South Highway 6, Elk City, Oklahoma. Sale every Friday at 9 a.m. to consign. Call Brandon Hickey, 580-497-6095.
He loves talking about farming and ranching. Here's more.
All right, welcome back, everybody.
Jimmy Clark.
I got Marcus Thibodeau here with me with the Department of Wildlife. We're here at the Pack Saddle Grill doing the show live today because today is Jimmy's Wildlife Wisdom Hour. Man, it's... we've got a lot of wisdom here today, too.
Glad Greg showed up.
Yeah, me too.
For the wisdom part of things.
Yeah. Let's check out the Hobart Farm and Garden Ag Weather Update for southwestern Oklahoma real quick. Altus 76, dew point 41, humidity's 28. Winds are out of the south at 8 miles an hour. The wind gusts up to 15. 3-day average 4-inch bare soil temperature, 62 degrees. Sunset at 5:43. Sunny and 80 today, 46 for low tonight, and mostly sunny and south winds 10 to 20 tomorrow, 80 degrees at the count of Altus. All right, you ready to finish the show up?
Yes,
come back with. We need a two-hour podcast,
at least.
Yeah, and I want to again thank Paula for letting us do the show here at the Pack Saddle Grill, so I got to throw this in for her, all right?
All right.
There's 3 days only that's concrete what you're going to eat for the special that day. She made it clear. Yeah, it's Wednesday, Thursday, and Friday. Wednesday's is ribs with mac cheese for $15. Thursday is that big chicken fry and mashed potatoes and gravy and one side for $15. And Friday is catfish, shrimp, coleslaw, hush puppies, and a side for $15. Now, the last Sunday of the month is prime rib Sunday, right?
Yep.
And then she told me, I caught her off guard a while ago. She told me that Saturday is what? Steaks and pork chops all day. And I said, you realize this weekend, this Saturday is opening day of quail season, and I got the deer in the headlight look. She forgot. I hope she got enough food ordered for this Saturday.
Better come hungry for one of those big ribeyes.
Because I'm hunting at the house this year on opening morning, but I'm coming up here to eat.
That's right.
So, man, you got a really cool job. And I know it's hard, and it's a lot going on, and you do a good job. raising your family, you're a member of the Crawford Fire Department, and that I've been watching your videos with your helicopter stuff and all this other stuff, and plus you get to burn ground. And mule deer, tell us what's going on with the mule deer.
Yeah, so we're in year two of Oklahoma's first mule deer research project. So we have mule deer in Oklahoma. We're
right
at the very edge of their distribution. So historically, we've always kind of kept track of the mule deer, but never really, you know, intensely managed specifically for them. Kind of just treated them as a bonus because we're right on the edge of their, like, their distribution, like I'm saying. And a few years ago, myself and a few biologists, we got together, and we decided to just take a deeper dive into mule deer population across the western side of the state. So we partnered with Oklahoma State University and Texas A&M Kingsville. And from that, some population research, pretty much we're bringing a helicopter in during the winter, and we're actually shooting nets over the deer and hobble them and
blindfold them. I've seen that.
Put GPS back, or GPS collars on them and ear tags on them to follow them around. And, you know, a lot of people ask me why we don't sedate them. And it's actually a lot safer to do it with the nets and all that stuff than to put drugs in them. So just to put that out there. But so we do all this. We, every deer that we handle, we take samples for everything under the sun for them. And with the does, we actually ultrasound them to see if they're pregnant or not. And every doe that we have handled so far has been, for the 2 years that we've been doing this, has been pregnant. That's really good.
No, it's real good.
And so with that, we have special transmitters that we can put in their birth canal, actually. And it's linked to their collar. So when she starts the fawning process, we get an email that she's starting to give birth and where that's happening at. And then we slip in there, you know, 8-10 hours after she should be done birthing, and put collars on the fawns to look at survival and movement, you know, habitat selection, all that stuff. And this information, you know, it's really cool to see the helicopters.
Oh, I know.
You know, see the pictures people get of the mule deer with the ear tags and stuff like that.
Some get to see them more often than others, don't they?
Yeah, and, you know, we're learning so much about where they occur in the state and how many there might really be, and just to help us better manage them at the end of this thing. So,
right.
It's pretty interesting to see their movements and all that stuff. It's really cool.
I think his hamburger is over there, and I didn't tell him. Hope it's not cold. No. Are you asking the hunters not to mess with the mule deer right now just because of the research, or is
No. Anything that we, you know, we tag or put a collar on, anything like that, you know, it's still fair game.
Right.
But we're going to get our collars back.
Yeah, right? Okay.
Those cost money.
Yeah.
Kind of like, it's really similar to the antelope work that we've been doing in the panhandle.
Right.
Before this. It's kind of how we, you know, expanded on that. But no, I mean, and most, 99% of the mule deer that are taken in the state, which it's only, you know, a few hundred every year, it's on private property.
Right.
Very, very limited chances on public land. So this is just helping us do our job better and more efficiently manage your resources.
Yeah, because I have mule deer at my place.
Yeah, and so answering some of those questions of, you know, after the drought when the mule deer kind of really took a crash down and Greer, Beckham, all that kind of stuff.
Right.
Why that they haven't really come back. But I mean, so
because they were doing a kind of a mule deer project back in the day at Sandy Sanders, correct?
Yeah, way back in the day they were working on them down there, and they're pretty hard to find one down there nowadays.
Right.
So hopefully answer some of those questions, maybe expand that population through addressing some limiting factors that we can find out through this research, and, you know, help grow that resource and that opportunity across the state for people to, you know, enjoy seeing them.
Right. Yeah, because it's like my wife, you know, when she spotted that 6-point mule deer buck, there's something wrong with this deer out here because it was hopping. Guess what? It wasn't a whitetail, honey. It was a mule deer, and that's kind of how they kind of run away. What do they call that walk? Do you know?
Not
hop along, Cassidy.
Not trying to get away very well.
No, and so they're just, because I think mule deer are kind of stupid.
They get that said about them.
Yeah. So I'll say it. But Marcus, I'm appreciate you doing show number two for me, the Jimmy's Wildlife Wisdom Hour. Wildlife Wisdom Hour. It's a once a month, first Monday every month, and that was my signal. The music's playing, and appreciate the Wildlife Department letting you guys participate in this. And next month, I think we're going to be talking about fish.
Awesome.
And then the next month, trapping. So it's going to be fun. So thanks for taking time out of your busy schedule to help me.
Thank you. I appreciate it.
It's the Day in Ag with Jimmy Clark, brought to you by First National Bank and Trust of Elk City and Sayre, Oklahoma.